event of the 5th annual Manchester Football Writing Festival at this wonderful National Football Museum that we have in Manchester, which is a place that tells stories about football. So it seems like an appropriate place to hold the opening event of the Football Writing Festival, although we didn't do that last year, I think it was somewhere else. This is much better, either way. Joining me, I'm Rory Smith, and we'll basically be asking questions, you don't need to know too much about me, Miguel Delaney, the Chief Football Correspondent of The Independent, and author of Stuck It Out to Saipan, which is a book you will not have read. next to him is Jonathan Northcroft, the Football Correspondent of The Sunday Times, and author of Fearless, a fictional work set in a world in which Wes Morgan has won the Premier League. And Jonathan Wilson, the inventor of football tactics, and the author of more books than it is healthy to read, the most recent of which is The Barcelona Legacy, looking at the relationship between Barcelona and modern football through Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho, which, since we're in Manchester, seems like a pretty sensible place to start. So, Jonathan, I'll start with you. When do you think Jose Mourinho will drive to Dundee in his bare feet?
It could go one of two ways. One is he sees out the season, and it'll be painful and grim and miserable, and United will finish fourth, and that'll be just good enough. The other is, it goes very badly wrong. Come on, please. And there's a serious danger of United not getting the Champions League next season, and he's gone in November.
Jonathan, go on with that.
I think spiritually he's halfway up the road to Dundee already, cramming Mars bars. He looks like, to me, he wants out. I think it looks like, to me, that the club also on some level want him out. When you look at the fact that the chief executive or executive chairman and him have completely different ideas now about where the club should go in terms of transfers, that's not a recipe for a manager like Mourinho staying. I think what we're seeing at the moment is meltdowns, strop behaviour that we've seen from him before that are very much part of the Jose endgame. I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone next month.
That's one thing that's really struck me about Mourinho in the last 2 years, although it seems like much longer, as it always does with Jose, is he's never really seemed happy in Manchester. It was almost as though he got the job and was immediately quite gloomy, and I don't really understand why that might be.
Well, living in a hotel with the Corby trouser press release says something about that as well. I think Sunday will tell a lot because just of who they're playing and when it's coming. Because I remember in that 2015-16 Chelsea season, every week you're kind of thinking, it's Chelsea, the champions of the top six side, surely now it'll get back to normal. And every week it's got sensationally worse. And I think if that happens this week, this should be sort of game where United dig in, get a result. But if they don't, then I think it'll reveal that this is a season where all bets are off, and it could really be a Chelsea game. I mean, whatever about a Mourinho third season, for a Mourinho 2015-16 season, all the pieces are there now. So I actually think Sunday will tell us.
I think there's almost a sense it's happening quicker than in 2015. Maybe that's because we've seen it before, and so we're anticipating it. But what happened in that press conference on Monday, you've just seen the side be beaten 3-0 by one of your rivals for the top four. And you're there trying to tell people, actually, tactically, this wasn't a defeat. Strategically, we didn't lose. And then a journalist has the nerve to point out that, wow, wasn't it 3-0? Which is literally just the score. I mean, that's not fake news in any sense. It was the score of the game that they had just played. And he storms out.
Yeah.
So that level of...
We didn't actually see that in 2015-16 until halfway through October when they lost to Southampton. And even that bizarre rant on Sky, wasn't it?
Was that at Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, Stamford Bridge.
30-minute answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought Monday night showed he is not as in control of the agenda as we think that he is. Because, the backdrop to that from a PR point of view was, the negativity of the week before caused by Brighton. He has his 3-minute press conference on Friday where he turns up early, creates another negative story by shortchanging the media, all that sort of stuff. And he was clearly either told or decided that he needed to sort of grab back some positivity. So he then does an interview with MUTV, sort of hideously sack of an interview where the first question is, don't know, these journalists get it wrong, isn't Carrington the most wonderful place whenever we come to work? And he smiles and he says how relaxed he is, how brilliant he is, how happy he is at Manchester United. His interview before the game against Spurs was full of the same sort of fake positivity. The interview after the game, again, was sort of trying to do that sort of Mourinho smile. So I think it was entirely against his plan or the club's plan to do what he did. But he's a very emotional man who's clearly under pressure. He's not in control of this.
Two things about that as well, especially in relation to what we're here for, to discuss with football-wide media. One, it feels a very old hat tactic, this thing of if I say something in press conference, it'll deflect the results. When it doesn't, it brings more questions. But secondly, and again, this feels like cliche, but I think it's actually very true, it's very transparent Trumpism that while the real world has all these headlines that are impossible to dispute, that an actual result would be a 3-0 defeat replacing the economy, while all this is happening, he's appealing to his quote-unquote support base and complaining about the fake news media when reality. But it has, to an extent, successfully whipped them up, I think.
And I think the point you make is really interesting as to what extent did he mean to do that. And I think we still have a slight tendency, and it's diminished, to see Mourinho as this great Machiavellian figure, this great puppet master, and you assume everything he's done for effect. And this again goes back to 1516 and the whole way of the Carnero thing, that I think, well, certainly two of us, were you there that game, Johnny?
Yeah.
The two draw in Swansea. And my first reaction when he starts laying into the medical staff was, oh, this is classic deflection. But then you see the footage from the camera behind the goal, and you actually see Mourinho's reaction as Ed Carnero and John Fearn run past him. And that's genuine anger. He's genuinely, you know, no longer in control of his emotions. And my suspicion is that there was not a deflection. That was just the emotions bubbling over. And it wasn't a Machiavellian tactic, it was just him losing control.
I've always thought that there's been a tendency to assume, and not just with Mourinho, but with other managers who were masters of mind games, to not only to take fairly puerile insults and dress them up as great psychological warfare, but also to give them an agency that they don't necessarily have, which is often stuff that is said in the heat of the moment after the game. They're not really thinking about it. We then, as a media, to create a storyline around football, we then give that to the media that perhaps it doesn't have. But I do wonder with Mourinho, and obviously we all have an agenda against Jose, that's how this works, but does all this stuff make him, whenever he leaves Manchester United, whether that's next week, whether it's the end of the season, whether it's after three glorious victories in the Champions League, does it make him less employable? Do clubs want this stuff attached to them anymore? Or has the world kind of moved on a bit?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I think he's making himself steadily less employable the more he does things like that, because to me it looks like football, and particularly football management, has become quite a lot about, you know, entertainment, or the providing of entertainment, or the creating of a sort of feel-good factor. People are seeing football a little bit differently to how they used to. Maybe it's this what it was like in the 1920s when every game was 7-5 or whatever before tactics were invented. But, you know, when football was joy, and we do seem to be going back to that, you know, where fans are embracing managers who just make them feel good. Marco Silva at Everton. You know, I look at Marco Silva as somebody who's actually, in old-fashioned terms, a serial failure, but is embraced by fans of different clubs because he makes them feel good.
It's a big thing, Mourinho, in contrast to all his rivals they can't stop complaining about their coverage. With United, you go to a game, even as a journalist, oh Christ, what's it going to be today? It's going to be grim. Whereas with Liverpool or City or Spurs, their fans are going to a game expecting a show, expecting excitement. And even if they don't win trophies, the football they play offers a more kind of exciting prospect of actually winning trophies. I think that ties into the show. I know we're going to come into Man City's documentary later, but it ties into this idea as well. So there's an obligation for these companies now, as much put on a football match as put on something to entertain, to put on the big show.
Yeah, I remember speaking to a guy called Alex Finn, I don't know if anyone remembers him, he worked for Saatchi & Saatchi, he helped set up the Champions League 20 years ago, he's a bit of a sort of football futurologist, and 20 years ago he said that he could see a day when, you know, football become too expensive, fans stop going organically, Then the model sort of shifted on to everything being tailored around TV, and supporters would end up becoming like the extras on Top of the Pops. They would be almost active sort of busting the stadiums to be part of the show. And now, you know, clearly we're not there yet. But what he was talking about, football becoming this kind of like televisual entertainment and not this kind of visceral, win-lose scenario that it used to be. I think there's an element of that happening.
I never saw an extra on Top of the Pops hire a plane to fly a banner. And now I'm wondering whether they weren't doing their job properly. The other thing I wanted to come on, we'll come on to questions, I think, on Mourinho, because I'm guessing there's quite a lot of people in the audience who have a view on Jose. The one thing I wanted to ask as well is, we've seen this pattern before, where he picks fights with players. Anthony Martial seems to be the most obvious example. He directs his fire towards the board, and he's not the only manager in football who does that. In this case, it's Ed Woodward. Do any of you think there's a lasting damage from Mourinho in terms of the relationship that the fans have with their club as a whole once he's gone? He does seem to force people to pick sides, either him or everybody else.
Yeah, and I think there can be. The counter example, I guess, would be Real Madrid, who recovered very, very quickly.
But it was still 3 years, though, actually, I think. But it wasn't when they won the Champions League, because there was still that element of particularly Madrid's right wing fans or the ultras who almost admired this authoritarian figure, because it kind of fit their vision of what a manager should be and the way he can whip them up.
Yeah, and I guess before Zidane got there was a level of toxicity. But I mean, certainly what happened to Inter, what happened to Chelsea the first time round, there was this toxic legacy that, I think one of the great ironies of Chelsea, a club that I think in many ways defies logic repeatedly. But when Rafa Benitez was there for that fellow's interim coach, and he sort of slowly froze John Terry out, and he sort of thought, well, okay, he's finally sort of washed away the final vestiges of Mourinhoism. And then, of course, the new manager comes in and immediately brings Terry back in, and Mourinhoism is back. So I think he does leave a legacy, and I think there are huge dangers that you get splits within the fan group, which are not easily reconcilable, because frankly, the hardcore Mourinho. Yeah, I think it's possible to still be supporting Mourinho and not be bonkers. But there is a significant proportion of the Mourinho support who have lost all grip on reality and are seeing black as white and white as black, and are arguing from a position that makes no logical sense. And so once you're back in that kind of corner, you kind of can't turn around and go, what's I doing there?
They have the Chelsea play 15-16.
Yeah. The Chelsea fans holding the banners, calling players rats. It's all very strange. And for Chelsea fans, at least Conte was a big enough figure to flush that out straight away. But I don't think that's necessarily the case.
And it does depend on the appointment. So with Liverpool, that split existed after Benitez left. And the fights that he picked maybe with slightly different reasons to Jose, although that may depend on the interpretation. But that basically lasted until Klopp was appointed, that there was a section of Liverpool support who you felt perhaps supported Benitez more than the club, that without Benitez there, Liverpool was somehow lesser in their eyes, and whether that might happen with Mourinho or Manchester United, I don't know.
See, I actually think this is another area where Mourinho's losing his touch. I don't think he does mobilise Manchester United fans in the way they used to mobilise Chelsea fans, or the way that Benitez still does for Newcastle supporters. And I felt he completely misinterpreted what happened at full time on Monday, which is really the Stretford end being the Stretford end, and enormously loyal supporters who have still got that ethos that Manchester United and the club is bigger than anything that's happening in the here and now, and will always support the club and manager, whoever it is. And I felt the small number that stayed were just expressing that and not expressing any great love for Benitez, for Mourinho. And I don't speak to Manchester United supporters, apart from one who works for my newspaper, who's in South Africa, who, temporary supporter, who are Jose aficionados in the way that you speak to Chelsea supporters, who he's lost a lot of love there, but there are still Chelsea supporters fighting the Mourinho fight, but I think the Manchester United supporters are still behind it, and feel free to tell me otherwise, are behind their club, but not necessarily Jose first.
Would anyone out there disagree with that, support it, or accuse us of a witch hunt? If there's any questions about Jose and Manchester United, now may be a good time. We should have a microphone somewhere.
Is this working out pretty, even in my horrible voice? Hi everyone. I was wondering, just on that last comment you made about whether the support for the Manchester United manager was sort of actually real or not, and this sort of whether it's actually true. I was wondering, from your perspectives on social media, what's it been like receiving comments? I remember there was an episode of Set Piece Menu, casual plug, where you talk about the attitudes of fans on social media being like really tribal and really horrible. I was wondering what's happened. Is the support for the Manchester United manager more obvious online than it is at the ground?
My instinct would be that it probably is, in a way that everything is much more kind of entrenched online, but I'll hand it over to Mike.
Give it to Mixi and Mixi to Twitter.
Yeah, that is true. Mixi's original introduction to this was going to be a man who has probably insulted me on Twitter in the last 72 hours. But he told me I wasn't allowed to do it.
Harsh. Although, see now. I actually think with Mourinho, I think by the nature of what he is and the level of support, I agree with Johnny in the sense that some of it is just United fans supporting the United manager, because I think actually it took about 6 or 7 months for there to be really open criticism of Moyes. For a long time, that was met with resistance. By Van Gaal as well, yeah. But I do think it's gone next level with Mourinho. So I think there are a portion of fans who want to buy in to this whole anti-media thing he's whipped up as well. Because it's quite odd, our job in that sense as well. There is an element that can just get very busy to any criticism of the club, so it can focus on football journalists. And yeah, I think it has been worse than Mourinho. It has been worse than pretty much any other situation, bar maybe when Liverpool was at it, maybe some of the Suarez stuff around then. This is the most intense I've encountered anyway.
Well, the other thing that separates it from quite a lot of stuff is just how much Twitter there is. There's just so much Twitter, even compared to Suarez, which was toxic. There's millions more accounts, there's whole that Russian troll factory, if they're all involved, it's awful. The other two things I think are quite important. One is that it feels like Jose is deliberately kind of leveraging a lot of that sentiment to his own ends. And the other, I have completely forgotten, which is extremely irritating. Do either of you two have a view whilst I try and remember? That's not helpful at all. I do think there's a sense that Jose's doing it deliberately, because he knows that sentiment is there and that he can kind of use that. Because the one thing that makes Jose and Trump really similar is their hair. Do not tweet that. But he's right. Is they have a natural sort of inheritance on the news cycles, and Jose manufactures these situations really well. He knows what will play well with the crowd. So if you look at the press conferences, he's been a manager for 16 years? He knows that if he walks out of the press conference after 3 minutes, the journalists will report that, because journalists love talking about journalism. And if he didn't want that to be a story, then he'd have sat down, spoken, he only does 10 minutes normally anyway, it's not like it's a massive use of his time, and offered one or two decent answers and left. That's what he's expected to do. He knows if he deviates from that, it will be picked up. So he did that on purpose. The same with the respect thing. He knows what he's doing. So you have to assume that he's trying to manage the news cycle.
You are right about the Rory, but I actually think it's a trick that is getting less and less effective over time. But we're also used to watching Jose now that, you know, we just deconstruct it in a minute. We can see what he's doing. Whenever I watch him try to shift the agenda, I just think that's one more thing that you don't do as well as Alex Ferguson used to. You know, I mean, the biggest example I can remember of Fergie was took Manchester United up to Rangers to play a pre-season game. Cantona, this was pre-Crystal Palace, but Cantona destroyed someone with a tackle. I hideous, petulant Cantona-style tackle, got sent off. It was going to be a huge story. And Fergie came at the press conference afterwards and he went, "What about sectarianism? It's terrible, isn't it? Like, telling the city apart." And it just became this whole Fergie attacks Rangers for the stories. Brilliant, nobody mentioned Cantona.
But that's another thing about Jones in that sense, in that I think he was more successful in terms of dealing with media because most of it was actually, there was a bit of charm about it, it was a mischief. Whereas now it's one tone all the time, and it's surly and angry. And I think that actually ties into the management of the team as well, because even, I was even thinking about, say, this situation now, or 2015-16 with Chelsea, compared to, say, one of Ferguson's crises, like 96, when they lost 5-0 to Newcastle, 6-3 to Hampton. I think at one point Ferguson came in, not angry, but sort of said, right, the messing stops now, and kind of went to build the confidence of the team as well. Whereas with Jose, and the way he deals with players, all the talk is that either it's extreme fury, which is quite rare, but more often than not, the cold treatment, which just helps actually create more and more tension. And it feels like he just doesn't link to his media performances. He doesn't have the deftness of someone like Ferguson.
Well, I also think his motivation is slightly different. That, you know, although Ferguson very, very clearly did manipulate the media, you always sense he was doing it for the good of the club. I think Mourinho is doing it for the good of Jose. And that's, you know, if you read from Soriano, you know, now the city CEO and formerly the director at Barca, if you read his book, which is a deeply boring book, but there's one really good bit, to quote my second Bible, and he talks about why in 2008 they Barcelona went for Guardiola and Mourinho. You know, come down and tries to treat the two of them. And one of the, you know, the list of criteria, one of them was, you know, in his media announcements, you know, does he enhance the image of the club? And you know, they looked at Mourinho and went, no, he tries to enhance the image of Jose Mourinho, and that will always be his, you know, his first priority. He's looking for excuses. And so he will pick scapegoats within the squad, because an enemy within is the best kind of enemy, because you can isolate them, you can pull everybody else together. So he starts with Luke Shaw, now seems to be Anthony Martial. A Woodward perhaps also put those up, well, you know, the board's easy to blame, you know, we all slag off our bosses.
But that's one thing fundamental to Mourinho's entire media strategy. Whatever about kind of appeal to the fans or even sort of like performance, you know, like, he will ultimately reach for anything that saves face for Jose Mourinho. And that's what basically comes down to, and the perception of him. And even, you sometimes feel with some of the Ed Woodward stuff recently that he's not so much saying it to protect his reputation now, but in terms of if it does go wrong, you know, in any future jobs, well, look, it wasn't my fault. That this is all kind of out there and muddying the discussion.
Let's have another question, I think. Dealer's choice. To be honest, there's two chaps out there.
Yeah. I thought the light meant it was on rather than off. There's obviously a battle being fought out in the media between Woodward and Mourinho, which I think is symptomatic of a bigger problem at United, in that you've got the football side, they want to win trophies, see entertaining football. And you've got the owners and their lieutenants, Richard Arnold and Ed Woodward, who basically see United as a marketing media company and would rather get rid of the football. I saw a tweet that went around earlier that United have decided to pull out the football because it's too expensive and it detracts from the media activities.
Yeah, I think that's all.
Hang on, that's a bit of order. I'm tempted to dodge that one because that ruins my script for the second half, to be perfectly honest. Would you like to touch on it now?
I'll touch on it briefly.
Good. Retain your best content for later.
Okay, my second best content upcoming. I think there is a truth to that, that the priorities are different. But I also think there's an issue with Mourinho's fit with the directors now. If we give the United directors the benefit of the doubt and say, yeah, football still matters to them, but they start to think, hang on, why do we want to sign a 30-year-old centre-back, a 28-year-old centre-back for, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70 million? What's their resale value? You know, do we really want to just give 60 million to get a player who we're not going to be able to sell on? And they're starting to ask, you know, as Chelsea began to ask 4 or 5 years ago, you know, why can't we bring in a, you know, 23, 24, why can't we do what Pochettino's done at Tottenham and develop players from our own academy? Why can't we do this in a more economic way? But the truth is, if you appoint Jose Mourinho, that's not what you're getting. If you appoint Pochettino, that's what he's great at. If you appoint Mourinho, he brings in a finished article, preferably somebody who has a point to prove. You know, his first Chelsea side was full of players who were sort of 90% of the finished product, but for whatever reason hadn't quite won things. They had that hunger already, and he was able to harness that. But you know, you're not going to be able to do that with 22, 23 of those. That's something you do with players who are already established but feel that they need to go a little bit further. So I think there's a disjunct there between how the board thinks things should be done and how Jose thinks things should be done. But there's also, I think, you know, as you say, there's an issue that the board are delighted that it's like whatever share price of the club's now valued at £3.2 billion. And actually, if United finished third or fourth this season, well, look at the share price, it's not that bad.
My favourite thing with Jose Mourinho is the thing about youth development really gets to him. And I remember Mitch was there when he did a presser at Chelsea, when we asked him about his youth development record, and he said, no, I think it's complete bollocks. Really great at developing youth, look at my Porto team. And he cited Vitor Baia, who'd been about 30 when Mourinho started coaching. They claimed him as a homegrown product that he was responsible for.
Was a 26-year-old as well.
Well, the entire team was over 28. He hadn't been anything to do with any of them at all.
I think Ashley Young's on his list now, isn't he? I mean, I think you're entirely right. That the feeling of watching Manchester United over the last few years is, you know, do you know your football club anymore in terms of the people who run it? But I actually think in the last 2 weeks, this spat between, or this disagreement between Woodward and Mourinho has actually given me a bit of encouragement on the football side. Because I think that the best news from a Manchester United point of view was Woodward and the board saying, no, we're not going to sign quick fix players anymore. We want to sign young superstars of the future. We want to develop them. And that suggests that at least retain a glimmer of understanding what Manchester United are about, or they're starting to be focused on what Manchester United are about. So if that's the way they want to go, and I think this is a wider point for United now, that they need to define what they want to do, whether that's keeping Jose or going back to the roots. I think it's just sort of enough is enough in terms of the post-Fergie lurching from one thing to the other. But from what I can gather, speaking to people around it, and from what I can see from the transfer disagreement, I think Woodward belatedly is learning perhaps what Manchester United should be doing, and that might mean getting rid of Jose Mourinho. But if he at least has an idea of what Manchester United should look like, I think that'd be an improvement in the last couple of years.
To be fair to Woodward, in that even though he deserves a lot of criticism for some of the management of the football side, there is a logical football sense to the decisions he's made this summer. Even so far, as kind of, I know it's been talked about, we need to have more football expertise than Mourinho because Mourinho wanted a centre half and something like that. But again, it's not quite what it's about. And the same thing, I suppose, with the Martial decision to come out today. That, I mean, there's both the football rationale for that and the business rationale. And it does at least indicate that maybe Woodward is learning a bit more, and he's not giving me any reason around like that, so I'm not backing him in that regard.
I knew that in the end, did you have a view on that? When I asked you if you wanted the microphone, and you went, no, I thought, not a chance that last. There's another question there.
Hi. Being a veteran of the Ryan Festival, if we wind the tape back to last year, you know, Jose was there, he had his big season, he won two trophies, just had a brilliant transfer window, everyone was jumping up and down about Pogba. And we were talking about Pep started off really slutched against Bournemouth, drawn against Everton, the jury was still out. At what point do you think was the tipping point for Jose last year? Do you think it was the game at Old Trafford with the 2-1 where they were outplayed? Or at what point do you think he knew, you know, it was on the turn?
It's really a good question, Laura. Completely reject the idea that anything we said last year was wrong. Definitely right. It's a really good question. When did it start to go sour for Mourinho?
It's a really good, something actually it's worth thinking about. It's a good question. But for me, the season turned, or Jose's, I think, his deepermost sort of feelings about where he is and his team were exposed at Anfield when he went to play. You know, United were in a great run, Liverpool were really struggling, struggling for personnel, struggling for results, and you expected him to go and attack Liverpool. And the fact that he went and he just completely killed the momentum of his own club season, and played so negatively and then tried to celebrate and talk up a 0-0, that to me suggested he realised that it isn't that good, what he's got isn't that good. And I think the City bandwagon is something that he may have seen coming even the season before that. But that showed almost an inferiority complex to me about Jose, that he wasn't willing to just do what Pep had done in that game, do what Liverpool do when they go away from home. That showed the doubts he has about what.
Also, 4 days after that Liverpool game, they played away to Benfica. They won 1-0 with a keeper error. But 2 weeks after that, I was actually at an event with the Benfica president, who speaking, and he spoke about the crowd, about how he met with Benfica, he was talking to Mourinho after that game. And one of the things Mourinho got about more than anything else was how difficult it is to financially compete with City. I think the real relevance of that is Mourinho finally putting it out there, look at the job, I mean, this is impossible. So it might have been that summer even, maybe, when City signed all those pullbacks.
Well, I'm relying on my memory here, which is not necessarily a great idea, but I think the day that goal scored Anfield, it was a lunchtime kickoff, and I remember sitting in the taxi going to Liverpool Station, and Lime Street was closed, so I had to go to South Park, which takes ages. And on the radio, I can't remember who was in the car with, but we were listening to City absolutely battering Watford away. So on the day that United put in this grim, performance, getting a goal and a draw, there's City going away from home, and is it 6-0 the Watford game? A huge win. So I think you're absolutely right, that day was critical. I think your point about the derby, that was sort of the confirmation. And then I think the sort of the cap on it was a severe game. But that, the Champions League was a place where, okay, the league's gone, City are 15, 20 points clear, whatever. But the Champions League, there's no reason why United couldn't have sort of dragged their way through that. We've seen teams before whose form has been great, you find a way to win. And they were so negative against pretty average, severe side away, get the goal and draw, and then dreadful at home. I mean, really bad at home. And so that was sort of, for me, it was sort of like, that's it, it's gone, this isn't coming back. Then the other games you could sort of see some way to be turned around. That Sevilla game was, this is staggeringly bad. Something fundamental has gone wrong here.
This half was also mentioned when we were talking about Man City, which is not, we've forgotten. City fans just might get used to the idea that when you're really, really good, I think that's quite boring for everybody else. Are there any more questions on Jose? There are. There's two over here. You can take them in whichever order you put to them.
Miguel touched on it earlier, how is the Mourinho's charm and the media savvy of his early days at Chelsea have kind of gone cold almost. And I think the media have got a tendency to portray Mourinho as a villain rather than an anti-hero almost. Do you think it's a possibility that this crisis button's been pressed way too early? Because I know in his pre-season and during that game when he got beat by Sevilla 2-1, that he said, with football heritage, United are going through a period of instability after getting rid of Sir Alex Ferguson. I just think it's possibly a bit too early that the media would the crisis button been pressed.
No, you can't push a crisis button too early. I think the point about he used to be an anti-hero and now he's become a villain, I think it's very apt. So you look back at those early days at Chelsea, we go up to his press conferences, even me, I went to some press conferences. You look forward to them because he'd say something outrageous, it'd be funny. He was sort of like the Richard III figure that, he's probably not on the side of the angels, but it's fun anyway. And that sense of fun is gone. And that, I think, is partly, he's become a sourer figure. I think partly, when you touched on earlier, there's a familiarity there now that rather than sort of accepting his perfections and sort of almost being taken in by them, we now sort of just go, oh look, there's Jose deflecting again. I mean, I think it's, I mean, crisis, okay, maybe it's not quite a crisis, but it's a big, big problem. You know, they've lost two games already this season. City have lost two in the whole last season. You know, they're already 4 points behind City, 6 points behind four clubs. I can't see how they suddenly go on a run of, you know, 12 wins in a row or something that could close that. And plus, there's Mourinho's history, that third season's always when it starts to go wrong. Well, it started to go wrong quite a while ago, and the third season, I think this time is when it's going to collapse.
I think the other thing to remember is that Jose's 55, and he to be fair, he's aging pretty well as Jose. He doesn't look quite from sort of unkempt at the moment, but he, you know, he's better looking than Alvin when I'm 55. But when he was 40, when he started at Chelsea, it's one thing being the slightly chippy, kind of cocky, swaggering figure when you're a relative managerial novice. He's kind of elder statesman age now, to be honest. He should be behaving better. And as all three have said, there is this sort of sourness to his performances now, and that's one that looks different on a young manager than it does on a relatively old manager. And I think that doesn't do him any favours at all.
On exactly that, I've heard it irritates him that people like Klopp, although he does like Pochettino, but he doesn't like that someone else has the status that he used to. That was basically the bright young thing that everyone kind of, you know, had out of his hand.
I mean, on the sort of results or the short term thing, I do take that point. If you look at United in 2008-09, where they end up Champions League final, win the Premier League, win the League Cup, win the Club World Cup, they had a worse start of the season than that. I think they won them in the first six games, lost to Liverpool, disastrous start of the season. But it's not about reacting to short-term set results. It's about the context of Jose at Manchester United. It's about not seeing over 2 years before now the signs of Manchester United playing the way you'd expect either Manchester United to play or a Jose Mourinho successful team to play. I don't think we've seen either of those two things. It's seeing losing the cup final tamely last year when he sets up this whole season to be about winning trophies, and yet he can't do what he used to be able to do. It's about being 19 points behind City, and then him saying that's the greatest, or one of the greatest achievements of his managerial career, which just sounds like a beaten man if he's genuine about that. So I think coming into this season, there was a sense that if it's going to happen for him, it has to happen now, and it has to happen pretty spectacularly. And, you know, gut instinct on what we've seen so far, it's getting worse and not better. And I think that's what everyone's reacting to, and not just two bad results in a week.
There used to be a thing that sort of 20, 25 years ago that you'd look at the Italian papers on Gazzetta on Channel 4, and it would always be if Juventus had drawn, Gazzetta would always say Juventus in crisis, and we used to laugh at the Italians and, oh my God, they're so short-term, these Italians, they're so emotional. We never do that. It's worse now. If any of the big teams drop points, it's a disaster, and the papers dress up as a disaster. That goes into a massive conversation about the nature of media and kind of trying to compete in a dwindling market and all that. But the crucial thing with Jose is, well, he's talked himself into this. Because if he'd not said all that stuff in the summer about how he was being let down by the board and how the squad, you know, certain of his players weren't committed, the mood of United as they went into the season would have been different enough, perhaps, certainly to survive losing to Brighton. So that's the sort of thing that could happen. Brighton were great that day, they were great at Anfield last week. You might not get away with being smashed through the line by Spurs as United manager, but it wouldn't quite have the kind of apocalyptic air about it. And I think to an extent he's talked himself into this problem, because now it does look like a dysfunctional club. If he doesn't say that stuff, maybe it doesn't look quite so dysfunctional. We have one other question over there, I think.
Mourinho does seem the problem at United, but for me, it seems two problems as well. Like, I know we'll talk about it later on in the City, but they seem to be 10 years ahead of United, and I wonder what you think about United maybe getting a direction of football that's been spoken about in the media. And I know it kind of talks about Mourinho, but I don't think he'll be there. Maybe in the short term he will, but moving forward, is this the catalyst, United getting a director of football like what you maybe see at Munich and at Juventus? Will that be the catalyst to at least shorten that gap to City and the rest of elite Europe?
Yeah, I'd say it's absolutely essential. I mean, because ultimately, I remember talking to an agent about this recently, that the best run clubs are literally clubs that have a sense of what they are, so they can build from that platform. It's what Liverpool done really well in the 2 years now with Klopp, and particularly who they've signed. And so it's what United need to do is define that football identity, and you don't do that without an actual football staff. And to be fair, I think we're going to come on to this later, but whatever about how they have their money and what that means, and obviously the huge moral questions there, but in terms of how the club, and just the football club, have used the money, I mean, someone described to me basically is they basically went to the Facebook of football, well, before all the kind of privacy issues, but they went to the Facebook in terms of kind of reshaping and being seen or whatever, which was Barcelona. So they had the best minds in and just it imposed the cleverest football structure on the club, and we're now seeing the effect of that. So United basically have to do something similar, but they've got to do something more fundamental, which is bring in someone that knows how to instill an identity in the club, and every decision that the football club makes from there fits into that.
I mean, I broadly agree with that. I think the danger, though, is how does Jose respond to having a director of football pulling above him? Because when Avram Grant arrived at Chelsea, you know, he was gone 6 months later.
And he was pretty well qualified, Avram Grant, to do that job. He was the guy you want then to be director of football. But I think that needs a director of football more than anything else. You heard after Fergie left that at Carrington, the Aon training complex, all the scouts offices were empty. They kind of been on almost on this hiring freeze where they've just not really filled a lot of the football positions. And the best parallel for United now is Liverpool in 1990. That's who they are. And it's a club that has been dominant for so long that they've not noticed the currents changing beneath them. And they're having to catch up. And I think a director of football will be a start of that. My worry with the names they're linked with, people like Monchi and Fabio Baratici at Juventus, they're deal makers. They're not, it's a Man City word, but they're not like holistic figures who want to, City really didn't do that word any favours, it's a really good word for what you need. The holistic figure will kind of join together the youth academy and the marketing side and the recruitment side of it and making sure that everything kind of works together. And I think someone in Germany told me a couple of weeks ago that what you need in that figure, that sporting director figure, is someone who's kind of done a bit of all of those jobs, so they understand how the club fits together. And I think the risk that United will look for is that they'll go for someone who can help them in the transfer market, when actually what you need is, you need a technocrat, basically. You need a really good technocrat to bring everything together to make you a modern club.
You need someone in a decision-making position who cares about more than just himself, the short term, and I guess cares about other human beings at the club. Now that can actually be a manager. If you look at how Klopp has imposed his sort of ethos at Liverpool quite successfully, he does it, he expresses it through his signings, he expresses it through his faith in young players. Pochettino does exactly the same at Tottenham. And for somebody like Klopp, he's got Michael Edwards, who is essentially, you know, a super analyst, a good deal maker, technocrat, but not necessarily, you know, the holistic sort of major figure in the club. But Manchester United, I don't think I've got anybody who looks outside themselves at the moment. I don't think in the board there's football knowledge. I think, as we said, the manager's short term is about himself. So whatever the mix is, they just need to get somebody who thinks strategically. If they're going to keep Mourinho, then obviously they need a big director of football who thinks strategy. They could go another way. Somebody suggested to me that the best manager they could get would be to go for Nagelsmann or Tedesco or somebody from one of the younger guys from the Bundesliga who has got a holistic view of how to build a club and then build around them. I don't think it matters what the mix is, I just think it's important that somebody at some level has got to start thinking long-term and strategically about the football at United.
I think we've proved pretty conclusively in this 45 minutes that the media is not obsessed with Jose Mourinho. So we'll take a break. His name will not be mentioned in the second half. Buy some books, have a drink, we'll be back in about 15 minutes.